coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Hello and welcome to today's Worth Doing Badly. On this episode, we will survey the lessons for the fifth Sunday after the Epiphany, according to Series B of the three-year series lectionary. And they are Isaiah 40 verses 21 to 31, Psalm 147 verses 1 to 11, 1 Corinthians 9 verses 16 to 27, and the Gospel according to Mark, the first chapter, verses 29 to 39. We begin with David Weber, followed by comments and questions from Ethan Stoppenhagen.
The four Gospels spell out the significance of Christ's incarnation. And they do this by recording key moments in Jesus' movement from his birth to his crucifixion to the resurrection. So this general Christmas to Easter arch, under that arc, each of the Gospels has a unique way of spelling out the significance of the incarnation by paying attention to small and sometimes seemingly insignificant details in Jesus' life. And I think this passage is one of those instances in which Mark pays attention to things which seem to be unimportant, but which actually tell us volumes about what has changed because Christ came to earth. So, and what Mark reports is that Jesus began and ended with preaching at the synagogue. So Jesus' movements were a circle, and at the center of that was the synagogue and this act of preaching. So that would indicate that one of the most significant changes that the incarnation has brought to earth takes place in the act of preaching, which is not all that impressive, especially when compared to some of the other things Jesus did. Now, after he first left the synagogue, he went to a home and there healed a sick woman, which incited a rush of sick people who desired healing. And then Mark reports that Jesus escaped under the cloak of darkness to be alone and pray. He was found by Simon. Simon was puzzled by what seemed to be irresponsible behavior. Why would Jesus pray when there were so many people to heal? And the answer is because prayer was more important than healing. Preaching was more important than healing. And that's what I find hard to accept, because if I was next in line to be healed by Jesus, I would be terribly disappointed if Simon were to tell me that Jesus has gone to go off to pray and to go off to preach in other villages. And I would say, why doesn't he do what he can do in healing me now? So that's in reading this text, I wanted to kind of figure out what is the significance of Christ's incarnation in a way that captures this disconnect between what Jesus did with the healing and what he said about the importance of preaching and prayer. Now, in the past couple of weeks, just to remind ourselves, we have talked about the significance of the incarnation at Jesus' baptism, that the heavens were open and that God became mortal so that mortals could become gods. I mean, that's quite a claim. And more recently, when we dealt with St. Paul talking about Jesus as the fullness of time, we said the incarnation changed the meaning of time so that after Christ's incarnation, time was no longer the measure of our steady decline and depletion into death, but that time now measures our movement towards the fullness of life. And Paul says in Romans, now salvation is nearer than when we first believed. Here, I think Mark is telling us that Christ's incarnation means that life comes to us as a gift by grace. And that would shock absolutely no one. We've heard it over and over again. It has all the rhetorical power of a well-worn cliche. To say that life comes to us, and that's the essential truth that the incarnate in this world. Except when Simon experienced that truth, that life is a gift, he was shocked. He was shocked that Jesus chose to heal, and then Jesus chose not to continue healing. He was probably disappointed that when Jesus explained that the healing was less important than preaching. And the point was that the healing only was there to serve the preaching, to give attention to the preaching. And so Jesus made it clear that the importance he gave to the synagogue and to preaching was far superior to the importance of healing. He would not stop preaching. He would stop healing. And this is because only the word of preaching, the promise of preaching, could promise a permanent and perfect healing, which is the only way that our desire for life can be satisfied. Now, I think the important part of this text, I know that this is a long introduction to it, but the important part is that if life comes to us as a gift, then even the illness is a gift. But it's a gift that no one wants. But it's a gift nonetheless, because illness and injury and disease reveal something to the sufferer, reveal something that could only be done through this illness. And it reveals how deeply our desire for life is and how the fulfillment of that desire is out of our reach. That is the gift that illness gives us. It's a gift of revelation. It tells us what life is really about. And illness forces the sick to admit that they have become something inferior to what they were. It forces on them the truth that as time moves, we are becoming objectively worse. And even if we have temporary healing, we are becoming worse than our prior selves. And our desire is that we are moving towards the fullness of life. And that when we are ill, then we realize that life has to come to us, not by anything that we do. Now, that still doesn't make believing that life comes to us any less difficult. So I think, again, our experiences of illness reveal to us our need, not for temporary healing, but that the promise of that Christ preached, that the power of the incarnation would be real. See, the worst part of illness, I think, is this charade of false cheer. That people will say, oh, it's not as bad as it is, as it seems. Or they'll say something is that, yes, you're ill, but all bodies are good. Even though, you know, some bodies are riddled with cancer and the body is murdering itself. And what Jesus does is frees us from this false cheer to give real consolation. Illness is real. We desire for illness to be healed, but in this life, that healing is always only temporary. There's a kind of liberation to focus on the fact that we are, our illness is called sin, and we are unable to make this right. This is going to have to come from the outside. Life is going to have to be given to us. So people will even say a lie like physical health and beauty are unimportant, just to try to make the sick feel better. Jesus was not interested in making the sick feel better. He was interested in healing the sick forever. And that healing, again, I think it would be terribly disappointing to people, that healing was mediated through preaching and continues, again, a big disappointment, through our preaching of the gospel. So I think it's deeply consoling that the truth of the gospel is the assurance that our plight is temporary, and that the truth of the gospel proclaims is that Christ suffered our horror and shame. Christ in his incarnation suffered the deformation of illness so that the truth could get across to us that it is only temporary, which was proclaimed in the resurrection. That's the truth. How it's preached, I am at a loss.
Well, so that's my question, is then that really charges our preaching with almost like a healing quality, right?
Yeah, but not a healing quality that anyone's going to pay for. We can say that all we want. And I wonder, I mean, you're in your first year of being a pastor. Do you ever get in the pulpit and at the end of it just think, these people think my words are just idealistic, you know, fluff. I'm relying on words that are well used, like grace and gift. And yet, if it's actually true, it's life changing.
And I don't know if that means using the words in a different way.
Well, I think from the text, it would say these words on a Sunday morning are going to feel empty. But when we suffer illness or disease, it's at that moment that the words are either prove themselves to be true or they float off as meaningless idealism.
The rubber doesn't hit the road for preaching until people are experiencing whatever plight or your illness, right?
Yeah, I really would like to be able to suffer illness as a gift. I think the most admirable parts of St. Paul is that this is what he does. He says, when I'm weak, that's when I come to the realization that my strength is Christ and not my own. So, right. So, I mean, that's a very attractive quality. I'm not sure that is something that is going to come easy for me at all to see these deprivations or losses as gain in the end. I guess what I'm wondering is that I find myself wanting to communicate the truth without cliches and without relying on words that have just become empty. And that this passage really for me captured it. But of course, you know, I can't go through a long explanation in the sermon, but at least we got to the passage.
Well, yeah. And at least you have that in mind as you go into the pulpit. That'll shape how you preach. Even yeah. Without laying it out for the congregation.
The thing, again, you know, I am almost 70 years old, and I'm almost 70 years old. And the thing that gets me is that the Gospels do their work by just recounting the acts and teachings of Jesus, right? And I know that a lot of people say, well, you know, we know that. We've heard that before. But for some reason, hearing it weekly is what is required to understand, because it's not really a knowing something. I think that the preaching is more like, you know, getting your weekly medicine or having your weekly dinner. You could never say that the memory of a dinner will actually satisfy you, because, you know, that's not how food works, having a memory. So at any rate, on to the psalm. Maybe something will happen here, especially because, you know, in this text, Jesus valued prayer higher than physical healing. And of course, the reason why the psalm is a part of our services is that it takes the gospel truth and turns it into a prayer. So in this particular prayer, a poetic prayer, the experience is of being scattered and brokenhearted and ill, have the benefit. The psalmist celebrates the benefit because they reveal our longing for God's kindness. When we are experiencing the antithesis of this kindness, we then pray with passionate desire that God would heal our painful wounds. So the illness, again, it has this quality of being a gift, because by experiencing human weakness and wickedness, it pulls back how deep our desire for God's goodness and for an eternal cure. And what the psalm says is what it does is expose that life is not given to us by the might of the horse, is the metaphor that you use. We all think that if I just have enough of money or have enough power, that life will be given to us. But as the psalmist says, might is real, but it is not capable of giving what we desire. That requires that the eternal God, who is the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, be present in our life. And our experiences of unhappiness become blessed because they spur, what the psalmist says, our longing for God's kindness.
How does the fear of the Lord fit into that? the psalm sort of wraps up. God doesn't delight in the strength. He delights in the fear of him.
You know, use Bob Dylan. You're going to fear someone.
Yeah.
Right? So in other words, if fear is something that captures our attention, that's fixated. And I think that's what the Gospels do for us, is they fixate our attention. They unfix our attention on the things that are fearful, that have no solution, and fixate our attention on God. Because we know that that word fear is a very elastic term, not that debilitating fear in which we're paralyzed. Do you find that people don't understand how fear of the Lord can be a good thing?
Yeah, you know, as we were talking about all of those, you know, the words like grace and gift, and it reminded me how much time I spend rehashing the definitions, how those words have so much more meaning than just the emotional aspect that we attach to it today.
Yeah, I mean, that's the benefit of being a preacher. I know there's fewer and fewer people that are going into the ministry because it lacks the perks, some kind of perks. I don't understand. And the main perk is that you're a person that's given money to pay attention to God's word, which is its own reward. Right. I mean, I think almost every preacher went into it because God's word revealed things that nothing else revealed. It gave hope where there wasn't hope. I mean, it infused a spiritual liveliness that had been lacking. And why that is no longer a desirable enough thing to draw people into the ministry continues to puzzle me. And I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, being a minister is difficult because it just looks so superfluous. All right. So moving on to Isaiah. Isaiah was one who, he's the model minister, let's say, gifted, politically powerful, and rather chose to be known as a prophet. Now, what Isaiah tells us is that being a creature is really confusing. We really don't know what life is or how we get it. We flourish and then we wither. That ends in death. What's the point of an existence that has illness and disease? What's the point of an existence that is tossed between wickedness and weakness? And then we ask, as what illness does, is who is our true self? Is our true self, are we experiencing our true self when we're flourishing? Or are we really our true selves when we're perishing? Isaiah answers this by saying, was it not told to you how the earth was founded? And this is the passage that alerted me to the fact that what Mark was getting at is that life is a gift, and that is most profoundly evident in the fact that the world is a creation. De creatio ex nihilo is the Latin for it, that the world was given out of nothing, pure gift, only because God spoke. So this is why Jesus valued preaching above all else, is that was the creating word that established love. And in this creation, that's where God's love was most evident. And I falsify the claim that life is a gift every time I suffer anxiety and worry about the future. Worry that life won't come to me if I believe this or if I do this, rather than seeing that life after the incarnation is promised as a gift. So Isaiah reminds us that our lives under God's care turn out as they began, by God giving us life. This is why I like the phrase, as it was in the beginning. So we constantly remind ourselves, what was it like in the beginning? Well, it was creatio ex nihilo. Nothing became everything. And that is, that's how it shall be. And that is how it is now. I mean, it's a beautiful phrase, but if we could believe that we are even now enjoying the life that was given in the future or in the past and that will be in the future, and that that life comes to us as a gift. Then our illnesses and imperfections no longer have the will that they do. It was to believe this is to be, as Paul says, to be free. So that we don't miss the point that the meaning of life, what the meaning of life is, Isaiah ends with how he began. Do you not know? Have you not heard? An eternal God is the Lord, creator of the ends of the earth. That is the meaning of the incarnation, that this God has taken flesh in order to give us this gift of life. And then we conclude with Paul, and this passage is just so saturated with all of the best parts of Paul's teaching, that the thing I think is remarkable is that Paul recognized that if life is truly a gift of grace, there are a couple things that follow. One is, boasting is just ridiculous. Who boasts about receiving a gift? No, you glory in the giver of the gift. And Paul just says, you know, the world is filled with all sorts of boasting, but it's empty. There's nothing to it because it misses the point that even now life is a gift because the incarnation took place. We have this gift of life, and that for Paul is liberating. That Paul recognized that if life comes as a gift, then Paul said, Christ could give me as a gift to the non-Jews. And Paul found that liberating, that he was a gift to the non-Jews, and that freed him to find ways to proclaim the gospel to people who were totally different from him. And Paul goes on to recognize that being a gift to others, that's what it means to be in the gift economy. Not that just life comes to us as a gift, but life is given to others through us because we become God's gift. Paul says that truth unleashed an intellectual and spiritual creativity that prompted him to find ways to connect with others over, you know, vast differences. To Jews, he would become more Jewish. To those who imagined they lived without law, Paul found ways to show them that their real desire was not to be lawless, but they desired not to be condemned. And then Paul enjoyed, his greatest enjoyment was to do something economically crazy by giving away his service for nothing. And he says, the money I could get is meaningless compared to being able to be trusted, because I'm not doing it for money, to be able to proclaim in a trustworthy way that the eternal God, who is the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, has become incarnate.
Thank you, David and Ethan, and thank you for listening. All the podcasts from this series, Worth Doing Badly, are available from our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app, download it for free from Google Play or the App Store. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other program on our schedule, send me an email to manager@lutheranradio.co.uk. I am your host, Jamie Krieger, and I will be back next week with David and Ethan. Thank you again for listening, and stay on for more here on Lutheran Radio UK.